Flash to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by all. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, it is Tuesday, October 8th. It is, for Flames fans, the night before the start of the regular season, and we've got a good hour planned for you on Flames Talk coming up here as we welcome you into the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. Flames Talk underway on this Tuesday. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. So the season starts Wednesday night for the Flames in Vancouver. Game one of 82 after a 5-2-1 preseason. Lots of buzz, lots of talk, and we're ready to come and surprise some people this year from the Calgary Flames. What did Nazem Kadri say on Tuesday morning? That there's a sneaky amount of talent in here. I know that got some people excited. So now we start to find out how it's all going to play itself out starting on Wednesday night. It's Pat Steinberg along with you here at the Hot Stove Lounge. And because we're on the eve of the regular season for the Calgary Flames, time for a little season preview hour around the table. Time for, we don't have access to Derek Wills on this Tuesday because of travel to Vancouver. So our daily Flames round table on Tuesday's Flames Talk is truly a round table here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Wes Gilbertson of Post Media is our co-host all week here on Flames Talk. Wes's colleague at Post Media, Danny Austin, is in here with us. So we got the Post Media crew and Aaron Vickers from NHL.com all around the table and ready to rock for a season-opening roundtable. The Daily Flames roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Welcome back to Danny Austin, first of all. It's good to have you back on the old roundtable. How are we doing?
I'm doing great, buddy. Thanks for having me.
It is good to have Aaron Vickers with us from NHL.com, as per normal. Hello, Vix.
As per normal. I appreciate that warm invite, pal.
Well, I mean, we're always happy
to
have you.
He's always here.
And Wes is with us all week. Hi, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
The excitement level through the roof for the start of the regular season. Guys, I think the biggest story of training camp has been the emergence of Sam Hanzek. So why don't we start there as we kick things around. Text lines open at 960-960 if you want to jump in. But guys, as Sam Hanzek is presumably going to make his NHL debut Wednesday night in Vancouver on a line with Nazem Kadri down the middle and Andrei Kuzmenko on the right side. A lot of excitement surrounding the now number 29 for the Calgary Flames. Wes, and as we kick it off, okay, we saw Matt Coronato make the team out of camp last year. He was a great story, and it kind of regressed, and he would eventually get sent to the American League for the majority of the rest of the season. So knowing that Sam Hanzek is about to make his NHL debut on Wednesday, guys, what are realistic expectations for Sam this year?
And I love the way you phrase that, realistic expectations, because the truth of the matter is that Sam Hanzek has already exceeded the expectations of the Calgary Flames by cracking the opening night roster. This was not a guy, despite their maybe excitement level about the tools he has to, you know, despite feeling better than maybe the outside world was about how he was progressing, the Calgary Flames did not have him on the radar to be an opening night candidate. And so I think that's important for starters, is just to remember, like, this part is almost gravy when you talk about the way he's progressing, and then to give him an opportunity to start due to the injury to Yegor Sharangovich. Like, we're going to be watching him tomorrow night on the top line with Nazem Kadri and with Andrei Kuzmenko. That's going to mean
are we all on the same page, by the way, that the whoever, like, are we ready to say that whoever Kadri centering is the top line? Are we all in agreement with that?
100%.
Okay. I think that's sort of a
just like to
sort
make
of
sure.
a slam
just
dunk like at this point. Sure. Yeah.
What's the alternative?
I don't know. Sometimes I see. I just like to make sure that we're all doing that correctly. So I just want to make sure we're unanimous.
I think, like, if we look at October I think it's a realistic expectation to ask that Sam Hontzek looks like a guy who deserves to be in the lineup every night. I don't know how that presents in points or goals or plus minus or whatever countables you want to look at, but I think if he gets past the point that Matt Coronato got to, like if he gets past that six or seven games where it's like, geez, we might need to send this guy down. He's in a little bit over his head now that this is ramped up. One thing Sam Hontzek has going for him that Matt Coronato didn't necessarily is he's a really strong skater. But if Sam Hontzek, I think, looks like a guy at the end of October who should still be playing every single night and playing in a top nine role every single night, I think that's a really, really good start. And I think that's realistic.
Yeah, I would go with a similar thing. I mean, I will say before I start that I'm very grateful that the Google algorithm means it's hard to find old stories, because you could look up a post-media story last year where I did predict that Matthew Coronato would score 30 goals. It was my first training camp. I can get optimistic. But, I mean, I don't see any reason. Like, look, I don't think we're going to go out here and say that Sam Hontzek's going to get 60 points. But he's being put in an amazing position to succeed. And I think that, like, part of the difference between him and Coronato is I do think that the work that we saw Sam Hontzek do in the corners, I mean, the Desharnais penalty sort of is the one that jumps out to me, where he went in there and he battled one of the biggest guys in the league, and he took an elbow to the face and drew a penalty. And I do think that he's not just a guy who can skate and play with the puck. I think he can go in and do the dirty work. And you know, a lot's been made of him working with Martin Pospisil, but if he's bringing in that same attitude of, like, it's going to be the work that keeps me here, that's where I begin to have faith that he really could stick around. And he's 19, and I believe Sam Bennett was the last teenager to play for this team.
Yep, that sounds...
Matthew Tkachuk,
yeah.
But
fair, yeah.
Tkachuk, Bennett, Monahan, and then... I don't even know before
Sam
Hontzek, that.
Like, that's the next one since then.
Yeah, and the difference with Sam Hontzek, obviously, being that those other guys, when they played their first game for the Flames, couldn't go to the AHL. Like, they were not at an age that they were eligible to play in the minors. So for Sam Hontzek to potentially skip that step is something this organization just has not done.
Especially when it's not just coming into camp. Like, it was 4 or 5 days in. He did not have a good rookie tournament out in Penticton at all. I mean, I don't think anything he did there necessarily screamed that this guy was going to be making the team at the end. So, I mean, the progress has been amazing. If he does end up spending a stint in the AHL, like, that's not a failure in my mind.
Yeah.
But similar to West, like, I believe he's being put in the best possible situation to gain confidence and succeed playing with Kadri. And we saw what Kadri did for Zary and Pospisil last year. And hopefully it's more of the same. But I don't mind placing expectations on him playing 60 games this year. That I think that's realistic.
For me, I honestly don't know where to gauge this response, because, first of all, nobody's expecting him to lead the Flames in scoring like he did in preseason. That's out the window. And to put a point value, I don't think that's the way to measure the expectation for Sam Hontzek. I do believe that it is games played, because he can contribute in ways other than point production, which I don't think necessarily last year Matt Coronato was in the same or an identical position to do, whereas Hontzek you can use up and down the lineup. You can use him on both sides of special teams if you want. And I just go back to Coronato, and again, he was shot out of a cannon last year, got to the 10-game mark, and then was down with the Calgary Wranglers.
Yep.
So the first measure of success for me in terms of Sam Hontzek is play more games than Matt Coronato did before the dip and before you eventually get reassigned. I'll echo your thoughts, where I don't think it's a bad thing at all if Sam Hontzek needs some seasoning in the American Hockey League, but at the same time, I can see him playing 70-plus games just with what we saw. So it's determining for me, and what makes this so hard is, was he hot for 3 weeks? Because he was really cold, in my opinion, in Penticton, found it in main camp, which is where you need to find it. If you can only be hot in one, you get hot in main camp. Can he continue the momentum when things ramp up in game one of the regular season, when they ramp up around American Thanksgiving, so on and so forth? I'm just making sure, in terms of the expectation I have for Sam Hontzek, is that he's able to clear those hurdles.
Right.
I guess for me, guys, I look at it and I say to myself, I like the way that Wes, you phrased it when talking about, you know, that he looks like he belongs and looks like this is where he's supposed to be. And I, Danny, I like that you went the games played route on it as well, because the last guy that reminds me, because this is a little bit different than Bennett and Tkachuk. I mean, Tkachuk was just it was such a no brainer that he was not going back to junior. And if you remember, Bennett got hurt in training camp, so wasn't ready to start the season. But, you know, Sean Monahan started off hot, made the team out of camp, and we all thought at the time he was, okay, is he going to play 9 games or is he going to get past that? And he was scoring goals early on, so he did get past that. And the next question was, well, are they going to send him to the World Juniors or are they going to let him stay? They did not send him to the World Juniors, and he stuck around with the team. But he definitely had that dip, right? Monahan came out and was very much hot out of the gates, and then December, January kind of dipped a little bit and then was able to find it again. And to me, not numbers wise, like Vix, I don't think he needs to score 20 like Monahan did
right
in his rookie season, but I think that is a realistic expectation that a guy who has looked as good as he did in the preseason in training camp is able to stick all year with the Flames. And yeah, it's not going to be perfect, and he's probably going to hit a wall at some point, but it's if he battles through that wall, that's another positive step forward. And I'm not saying if he doesn't hit these expectations, it's a disappointment, but I think staying all year in the NHL is a realistic expectation. Even if that doesn't happen and he does have to go to the American League, we'll understand that too.
Well, that's job number one for him, is to be here as long as possible. And if you can find a way to be here all 82 games, I think that is an absolute check. Can he score 20 goals? Potentially. Is that the expectation that I would put on him? Maybe not so much. And again, we don't know what's going to happen in terms of injuries to other players, in terms of trades for other players that open up more and more opportunity for a player like Sam Hanzik. But I'm really entering this one with sort of tempered expectations, or not trying not to put too much on him. Again, given the growth that he's shown is phenomenal year over year, to where he was in camp last year, to where he is this year, even from the end of the regular season last year to the drop of training camp and working with Martin Pospisil, certainly raised the expectation for what he needs to do off the ice to be effective on the ice. But for me, it's okay, let's park the stats and let's see how long you can stick around here. And the more and more games played you rack up, the better it is developmentally for him. And obviously, from a Flames perspective, you're very happy with what you've seen because you continue to give him those games.
Pat, you mentioned Matthew Tkachuk, and while I don't want to compare the two players, where I think the development can be can dovetail a little bit, is I won't be the least bit surprised, and it could happen as soon as after 40 minutes tomorrow in Vancouver, if they're chasing the game, if they need a goal or two, I'm not going to be the least surprised to see Connor Zary up on that top line with Kuzmenko and Kadri, and Sam Hanzik settling in with Backlund and Coleman. And Matthew Tkachuk spent a lot of time with Michael Backlund in the early stages. That was a big part.
Frolik.
Right, Frolik being the other guy on that line. But that was a big part of his introduction to the NHL, is, hey, you show us that you can be defensively responsible, that you can be a guy that we can put on that shutdown line. It's going to take a little while until you're necessarily producing at the level that your draft pedigree would suggest at the NHL level. But show us you can do this, and then we're going to build it from there. And that's one thing. I was really impressed with how responsible, and I get it was a preseason game, and 80% of the guys on the ice were trying not to get hurt, but I was really impressed by how Sam Hanzik looked beside Michael Backlund on Friday against the Winnipeg Jets. And I wonder, as we talk about a guy who tries to find his niche in the NHL and find out exactly how, like, let's not forget, a few days ago before Yegor Sharangovich was hurt, we were talking about him as the 13th forward tomorrow. And now we're talking about him on the top line. And so where can you fit in the every night lineup? I wonder if potentially it's beside Backlund and Coleman, which is a really nice landing spot for a young guy who has the sort of tools that Sam Hanzik possesses.
Yep. What's interesting about that, they didn't really do that switch with Coronado, right? When it wasn't working, they kind of kept him where it was. It probably speaks to how multidimensional they've used Hanzik if they were willing to do that.
Yeah, and I think this group, you know, with the departures of Lindholm and Mangiapane, since we were talking about the Coronado situation, like this group has some more, I don't know if it's fair to call them holes in the forward group, because we think we know what the top nine is going to look like, but there's some pieces that could be bumped out of their current spots, and suddenly you're shuffling the deck a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a young guy like Sam Honzek, that's almost to your advantage. You know, if it's not going great guns on the top line, there's some other places you can fit in.
Yep.
Well, I was just thinking to that is, okay, he's a guy that could literally play on all four of your lines. And depending on what line he is, I think changes the expectation of what you want out of him or what would be deemed a successful game or a good game.
Yep. Around the table, Aaron Vickers, Danny Austin, Wes Gilbertson, and Steinberg along with you on a little Tuesday season opening roundtable here on Flames Talk. Okay, this one maybe not as in-depth. I'm curious as to what we're all thinking on this one. Maybe not so much what we think is going to happen, but if it were you making the choice, Danny, who is starting on Wednesday night between the pipes? If you're making the call, who are you going with?
Dan Vladar. To be honest, I think he was better in camp. I've always said this. I see nothing wrong with Dustin Wolf taking, a step for him can be playing 30 games. 35 is probably even a bit much. Like, I really have never, I mean, it's always been a competition, and it should have been, and it was an open competition, but I felt that it was Dan Vladar's to lose from the start of camp, and I don't think he's done anything to suggest that that he has lost it. And, he's been here for a couple of years. He's been the backup. Mm-hmm. This is the opportunity he's been waiting for. I think it would be pretty hard to tell him, even if it was relatively even, that Dustin Wolf is getting the start. So I don't really even necessarily see an argument for Wolf for the season opener. I think it's got to be Dan Vladar.
I'll try. Do you want to go first?
No, go for it.
I think Dustin Wolf was better than Dan Vladar in training camp. And I think you absolutely throw out that game last Wednesday against the Winnipeg Jets, where all five of those goals were grade A chances with a defense that isn't going to closely resemble what you're going to put on the ice next Wednesday, tomorrow, against the Vancouver Canucks. For me, Dustin Wolf did everything that you wanted him to do in terms of taking that next. And again, we'll preface everything by saying it's training camp games and 80% of the guys are trying not to get hurt, so on and so forth. But Dustin Wolf's management of his crease, his ability to fight through traffic, his lateral movement, his north-south movement in the crease, and just his general poise. Like, for me, and we might be splitting hairs.
I'm not knocking Dustin Wolf.
But I thought Dustin Wolf was better in training camp, and as a result, that would have been the guy that I would go to. But I'm not going to sit here and go, I can't believe they're going Dan Vladar, because to your point, he is the incumbent. He is the guy that's been here longer. He has way more NHL experience. But for me, I liked what I saw out of Dustin Wolf.
You know, guys, just naming the game one starter, I think, is too easy. So I'm just gonna read you the schedule, okay? If anyone wants to write this down, it's Dan Vladar tomorrow in Vancouver.
Okay.
It's Dustin Wolf at home against the Philadelphia Flyers on Saturday. It's Dan Vladar the next night in Edmonton. It's Dustin Wolf at home against the Blackhawks, and then we'll go from there. And, you know, could a shutout for Dan Vladar, who I fully expect to be between the pipes
right
tomorrow night. I know the Rogers part. It's a center.
Rogers Arena. Rogers Arena, yep.
Shout out Rogers. Sponsors all the buildings. Could a shutout tomorrow change it? Absolutely. But I really think, as proof that this competition is going to carry on a while, I could see us preparing for game five of the season talking about two starts apiece, and I think that would be perfect.
But who would Wes Gilbertson start?
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we were sitting here a week and a half ago, and you were trying to light my hair on fire about how
Vic
Dustin
was trying to
Wolf
send Dustin Wolf to the American
could
League.
Wind up back in
yet
the
he's
AHL.
My game one starter.
I remember you said to me, well, Wes would probably argue that Wolf should start opening night, and I remember sitting in this exact chair thinking, well, I can't. I would actually start Dan Vladar on opening night, but that's really going to complicate my Dustin Wolf defense. But I do think as the guy that you've had in the organization for a few years, as a guy that, you know, you shut down early so he'd be ready for the potential of an opportunity like that, I do think Dan Vladar sort of had to play his way out of the starting job in camp, and I don't think he did. But I'm still starting Wolf Saturday against Philadelphia.
Okay. What's nice about the scenario that's likely to unfold is one guy gets the season opener, the other guy gets the home opener. And then you go from there. I agree with your schedule as you drew it up where it's going to go Vladar, Wolf, Vladar, Wolf. And then we'll see how it plays out. But Patty.
I'll break the tie. So we got two for Vladar, one for Wolf.
That doesn't sound like a tie.
Sorry, I will not break the tie. I will make it a tie.
Yes.
Let's try that. I would go Wolf only because I thought he was – first of all, I thought there was very little separating the three goalies in camp. They all did the job. And honestly, I think coming in – like, Wes, I think your read that it was kind of his job to lose. I know that, Danny, that's where you're coming from as well. Like, it was probably Vladar, Wolf, Cooley on the whiteboard coming in, and nobody did anything to change that because they all played well. So Vladar held his incumbent spot. Wolf and Cooley played well as well. But going based solely on who I thought was the best of the three, and this is just my opinion, but I thought it was Wolf. I thought that he was the guy that gave them the best body of work in the preseason. So that's who I would have gone with, and then I probably would have just alternated the same way. I would have had Vladar start the home opener. But, you know, it's a situation where I don't feel all that strongly about it, though, because, Danny, I understand why. I mean, we're all, I think, in agreement they're going to go with Vladar. I understand why. I just would lean slightly towards Wolf.
And not to butt in here on Danny, which is exactly what I'm doing, but one of the reasons I prefer Wolf against Philadelphia and Chicago as opposed to Vancouver and Edmonton is I'm still trying to set him up. Like, that's my goalie of the future, and I'm still trying to set him up for success a little bit. And that goes into it more for me. And now I'll throw it back over to Danny after so rudely interrupting. But that goes into it more for me than just the who played better in camp.
Yeah.
Well, yes, my question is, like, as you said, like, potentially an amazing performance shutout gets you two games in a row. What if you get shelled and let in? Like, if Dan Vladar goes out there or Dustin Wolf goes out there.
Are you poking holes in my schedule?
I'm just wondering. If Dustin Wolf, which I don't think he will be, and I'm not implying that, is terrible in his first start, does that buy Dan Vladar room? I mean, does a negative performance impact the schedule as much as a positive performance?
I mean, the way the schedule currently is, you're going back and forth games. So negative performance, I mean, you're sort of taking them out for the next game anyways, but yeah, like the schedule's in pencil. I
didn't think it was that hard a question.
I think we could see them bounce back and forth for a couple weeks before they settle into any sort of
groove. Is there any point, Vix, this year where it does, like, even for 3-4 weeks a guy gets rolled out as a number one? Like, do you see that? I think back to, what was it, Chad Johnson, Brian Elliott that one year, and all of a sudden Johnson got on a really good run midway through, and I think that he started like something like 15 of 17, and then it went back to Elliott, and do we see something like that at any point, or is it full on? One year, a couple of years ago, the Islanders literally alternated goaltenders every single game for, I want to say, all 82.
If a guy gets hot, you go with him, because you're still trying to learn about both goaltenders, regardless of, because they're in different positions in terms of age. But you still want to know if Dan Vladar can run 15 of 17 mm-hmm. and be a guy that can post a .935 save percentage over that stretch, because it might impact your decision making on a pending unrestricted free agent. Same thing with Dustin Wolf, where if he gets hot, well, yeah, of course you're going to get your young stud goalie in as much as you can when he's absolutely feeling it, because it gives you a look at, okay, when Dustin Wolf is on and he's in quote unquote number one, how does he deal with his day in, day out routine in order to maintain that success? I can absolutely see a scenario where a guy gets 15 of 17, but it's got to be more so that guy gets hot than the other guy gets cold for me.
That's bang on to me. Like, you're trying to decide through this season who you have in house that can be a number one goalie. And I think you'll see both of them get that sort of run. I don't know if it's quite 15 of 17 or whatever, but I think you'll see both of them get 4 or 5 or 6 in a row at points to say, like, okay, what does this look like? What, as we try to assess what we have for a future number one, what does this look like here?
Yep. I'm really curious as to how the goaltending, I think it will be the kind of number one ongoing story for this group this year.
I could do the schedule in December in the commercial
break.
Yeah,
you're good
for that? I'll keep
okay.
you guys posted.
I like that. We got Danny Austin, Wes Gilbertson, Aaron Vickers around the table. Pat Steinberg with you as this hour of Flames Talk is underway. It's a little season opening roundtable. It's a Tuesday with the Flames regular season opening Wednesday night in Vancouver. Flames Talk's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we're continuing our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. A little bit different than our normal Daily Flames Roundtable. We're doing full-on roundtable with Wes Gilbertson, Danny Austin, both of Post Media, and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. We've kicked through a couple of topics. We've dove in on realistic expectations for Sam Hanzek. We gave our thoughts as to who should start in net on Wednesday night in Vancouver. We don't have an official answer, but we're all assuming it's going to be Dan Vladar. And let's just keep it going. The Flames open their season on Wednesday night against the Canucks, so this is the eve of the regular season. And Vix, maybe we'll start with you on this one, because there's been a lot of talk. We heard Nazem Kadri with some, we've got some sneaky talent in here, and there's been a lot of, hey, don't sleep on us. That's been one of the themes since training camp got going 3 weeks ago. So as they enter the season with very low outside expectations from many people, what gives you the most optimism that this Flames group could be better than expected?
To me, it honestly, and you mentioned Nazem Kadri there in his comments, it comes down to the veteran core that they have, the big six in terms of their leadership group with Backlund, Kadri, Uyghur, Anderson, Huberto, Coleman. I think a lot of the pressure of making sure that this is a step in the right direction type season, I'm not even necessarily talking about standings, but more so the group as a whole just taking a step forward, I think a lot of the weight falls on those guys to do a lot of heavy lifting both on the ice and off of it. And I think we've seen individually at times these players really embrace that. And as a collective group, certainly they're going to embrace it as the leadership core. But I guess for me, when you talk about the different facets, okay, is it going to be the goaltending, defense, forward, sort of what is it that's going to propel this thing forward? To me, it comes down to those six guys, the buy-in that they have for what Craig Conroy is trying to do, and their sort of professionalism, experience, and leadership for the younger guys is really, to me, what would give me optimism that this group can take a step positively. Again, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the standings where they've got more points banked at the end of 82 games than they did last year, but collectively make sure that this thing is going in the right direction, the direction that it needs to do in order to, you know, in 2, 3, 4 years down the road, be more competitive night in, night out.
Yeah, so I asked Ryan Huska a question in today's media availability about not having to learn a new defensive system. And I think, like, no one forgets, but this team got off to a terrible start last year. There was a cloud hanging over the team, not only in training camp, but really for the whole season. There were so many challenges that just came along with knowing how many guys were going to get traded, all that. Like, I think we can't measure this, but the vibes are better right now than they were a year ago. And I think that the guys know more of what's expected of them, how the system is going to work, and all that. So, I mean, if they can come out, their first 10 games can't go much worse than they did last year. And I do think that they can begin to get the wheels turning just a little bit. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think, you know, what is optimism, I guess? I mean, here I am trying to be wax
deep.
Poetic. I know, fake deep. But like, a step in the right direction can just be this team knowing what its identity is going forward more than they ever were able to figure out last year. And I ultimately, like, I've said this before, but I don't know that they need to be good to be fun. And I think that they're going to be sort of fun this year. So I don't think that they're a bottom three team in the league. I don't think that they're a top three team in the Pacific Division. But I think that they know who they are a little bit more. They know who most of their personnel are going to be. And they know that they have young guys who are pushing over the next couple of years. I think it is optimism.
Yeah, I do think that sort of sense of certainty, like the not looking around the room and wondering what guys are still going to be there a month from now, I think the sort of maybe lack of BS that's going to come with not having a bunch of guys on expiring contracts and all that. I do think that's a reason for optimism. I think, you know, and I think very highly, as regular listeners know, of Ryan Huska as a coach, and I think, you know, that's going to help him continue to steer this thing in the right direction. Maybe the lack of distractions. And the other thing is, like, this group doesn't, when we talk about the Flames potentially being really lousy, I look at their forward group and there's too much depth to be awful. Like, if you want to see, go look at the San Jose Sharks or the Chicago Blackhawks forward cast. Like, yes, there's some, you know, Connor Bedard, and there's some high-end guys there, but, like, there's just too much depth here. So I know for some people listening, like, optimism would be being lousy for a year. They want a top three or a top five or a top seven pick, and I absolutely get that. But if you're looking at, okay, why was Nazem Kadri standing in front of his locker today and saying, hey, we have a sneaky amount of talent. We don't expect to go out there and lose every game. You know, why did Rasmus Anderson say, I mean, like, we're really looking forward to proving a lot of people wrong? It's because there is still some depth here.
And while they may not have a Connor Bedard or a Connor McDavid or a Dreisaitl or a Pedersen,
may not.
They've got depth. They do have that depth. Yeah. You look at their top three lines, and
there's not a lot separating them.
There's
for
not
sure.
one. There's not a lot separating them, but they're all quality lines. Like, they might they might play out in different roles and whatnot. But yeah, your top three lines has some sneaky good depth.
And on the blue line, like, I like their top four. Like, I genuinely do. Like, I think Miramanov was pretty good for a guy coming off a knee injury last year who hadn't had a training camp or played for their first half. And I mean, I can't ignore the 82 games for Kevin Ball. He's playing with Rasmus. Like, I think that there are a lot of good pieces here. And I just because we were talking about the offense, wanted to add that about the D, because I don't know about that third pairing necessarily. They've got to show it. But yeah, I don't think they're that bad.
And it's, you know, Wes, you talked about how kind of the lack of all of those things might play into it and could give you reason for optimism. It's the number one thing for me, and it's all kind of like tied together. So you don't have the distractions of all the pending UFAs saying they don't want to be here, or reports saying that they don't want to be here. So you don't have, you know, five or six guys in the room. You're saying, are you here next month? Like, are you in? You don't have the in and out of Hanifin and all that type of stuff. So that doesn't exist anymore. You also don't have the distractions that went along with the last two, because that's 2 years in a row that, you know, things have gotten off the rails pretty quickly. They went 5-1 in Darryl's last year and then, what, lost 8 in a row or whatever it was, and that derailed their season. And then last year, Danny, to your point, it was a horrible, like, remember how the Oilers and Flames had, like, 5 wins combined at the Heritage Classic? It was that bad at the end of October. But, you know, you had the distraction 2 years ago of Huberto and Uyghur coming in and Kadri coming in and all these high expectations despite who had left. And last year, you had all the distractions of the UFAs and a new coach and a new general manager. And none of that stuff exists, on top of the fact there are no expectations on the outside. And I just wonder if all of that spotlight is minuscule, distractions are so much less, you've got guys who say they want to be here, plus you've got a nice infusion of youth to keep things interesting. So all those things combined, guys, I just wonder if that has a little bit less of a dark cloud hanging over this group, and as a result, if that can't maybe have them surprise people in the early going.
And, like, anyone saying the distractions don't matter, like, I just looked it up to make sure that I wasn't remembering. Like, there are a bunch of stories from the end of October about the Flames pausing all contract talks. Like, those losses had real repercussions. We thought they were going to be able to sign guys like Noah Hanifin. So those losses, like, carried a real weight to them. Whereas, sorry, if this team loses 5 in a row this year, I don't think it's changing the direction the club's going. They know what direction they're going. So, yeah, I think that there is less pressure that comes with expectations being lower, but also that dark cloud just not being there.
Yeah, and I do think that sort of lack of distraction can be a reason for optimism, and yet and I don't know, maybe this dovetails into what we're going to talk about next, but you know, the devil's advocate would say, yeah, okay, you've got some continuity there now. Well, you, this is the same group that missed the playoffs last season. And this is the same, you know, group that had trouble going toe-to-toe with some of the heavyweights last season. So, you know, you could look at that continuity kind of either way, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yep. All right. Then on the other side, if that is what gives you optimism, guys, what concerns you the most? What's the area that you're like, oh, boy, that might be an area that is not so good this year?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that the high-end first-line talent is there. You asked, is Nazem Kadri, is that line the first line? I have all the time in the world for Nazem Kadri. Respect him as a player, as a human. But, like, he's been a second-line center his whole career. I think this team sort of has three second and third lines, and they don't have a first line, in my opinion. And you combine that with the fact that, like, you know, we don't talk about it much during camp, but, I mean, if Anthony Mantha or Kuzmenko are good, they're probably being traded. So I just don't know where that high-end offensive talent is coming for on this team. And everything we're going to say about reasons for optimism, we talk about the goaltending, that has to go right. We talk about getting Huberto going, that has to go right. We talk about Hanzek, that has to go. It's all stuff that has to go right. And there's never been a season where everything goes right. So, no, I don't think they're making the playoffs. I think that the doom and gloom that maybe it felt like we were going to experience in June isn't there. But I don't think that this team is good enough to make the playoffs.
I'm going to go back because you wanted to emphasize, you, Danny, wanted to emphasize, and this is me not calling you out. It's just so somebody that's listening knows which way I'm looking. I'll disagree with you. I'm most concerned about the defense. We've got, from what we know is fact, we've got two top four defensemen. I can't speak to Kevin Ball enough because I didn't see him in 82 games last year with the New Jersey Devils. He's certainly going to get tried in a top four role, so maybe you do have three. Miramanov's going to play his first full season. Pahal's going to play his first full season. You've got Hanley on your blue line that didn't get in much at all. You got Tyson Barrie, who was a frequent healthy scratch for the Nashville Predators last season, although I do like how he fits in with this. But to me, they're so many different sort of question marks on, are guys going to be slotted too high, or what do they look like when they get into an 82 game schedule? That sort of concerns me, particularly when you have two goalies in net as well that have never been number one goalies or have never sort of been a full-time starter. The defense and the depth on defense, and there's certainly kids coming, and that's sort of the optimistic side of that, but I'm curious to see how this defense holds up once we get into the regular season, once your third pair is getting, you know, line mashed against a Connor McDavid line, for example, or a Nathan MacKinnon line. It'll be a test of the depth of the somewhat veteran guys that they have on the blue line right now. That'd be my area of concern.
Yeah, I think you guys are both right on it. Like, it, I mean, for starters, when we talk about biggest concerns, the biggest concern for so many of our listeners, the biggest concern for so many Flames fans is that they're just good enough to barely miss the playoffs, right? That this is a team that doesn't either reap the rewards of a surprise season,
right,
or have an opportunity to put a fairly high pick in their coffers. But if we just look at the roster, like what, you know, what concerns Craig Conroy, what maybe keeps the general manager up at night, like we talk, guys, all the time about sort of this idea that championship teams are built straight through the middle, right? With your centers, your defense, and your goaltending. Well, where are the Flames strongest? On the wings, which is great, but, you know, do you have enough depth at center? No, you don't. You know, you have two proven guys who can play top, like, let's call it a top nine role in the NHL. You got two guys, and you need three proven there. You just lost another center prospect. You don't have someone kind of immediately knocking at the door. So that's one position. Then you go back to D. You've got two proven top four guys. Again, to your point, Vix, we'll see about Miramanov. We'll see about Kevin Ball. We'll see whether Jake Bean's one of those guys who can really flourish in his home city. And then you go back, and I do think the options are intriguing, but you don't know if you have a number one netminder.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're looking at concerns, you can kind of draw a line straight down the middle of the ice and almost check all three off.
It's kind of an extension of Danny's for me. I worry about Do they have the offense to be able to keep up with the teams they need to keep up with in the Pacific Division if they want to be a competitive playoff team? The last 2 years, which have been non-playoff years, one close and one not close. I mean, they missed by 17 points last year when it was all said and done. Last year, their leading scorer was tied for 36th in the NHL. That was Nazem Kadri with 75 points. And then the year before, Tyler Toffoli was tied for 48th in league scoring with 73 points. And I just, it's kind of exactly what you're talking about. I like their depth. I really do. And I think that depth is something that will make them a tough out more often than not. Like, I don't expect a lot of nights where the Flames are outclassed and just look like they're clearly the second best team on the ice, but I do think there will be nights where it's just, hey, the other team's got a little bit more and the Flames played hard, and I think that what we saw over 82 for Ryan Huska, this team will compete, and they're a little bit deeper now than they were to finish last season after all the trades kicked in. But I still just, from an offensive standpoint, if you're not even going to get your number one scorer into the top 30 around the league, you're like, do you have enough to put up offense with the teams that you'll need to be fighting for playoff spots with? And I know a lot of people don't even want to see this team in the playoffs, but if we're talking about competitiveness, that's the area that bothers me or worries me the most.
And like 8 or 9 minutes ago, I was sitting here talking about how they might be able to get off to a hotter start, but with all that, they just lost their top goal scorer week to week. So there's also a possibility. So,
didn't even think about that. That now the guy that led them in goal scoring isn't there last year.
As Danny pointed out, there's so much that has to go right, and or depending on how full your glass is, could go wrong for this team.
Yeah,
and there's arguably more, I think, question marks than at any point in recent history surrounding this team. Like there's a lot of intrigue, but it's been a long time since we didn't really know. Like, when was the last time there would have been a discussion on Flames Talk about who the number one netminder on opening night was? You know, that's something that's been pretty clear.
Probably about 5 years since Jacob signed here. So that would have been the 1920 season that
got finished in Edmonton. Yeah, and even going back before that, like, you knew the 1 year it was going to be Smith. You knew that 1 year it was going to be Brian Elliott. Like, you. It's part of, I think, what's going to make this season a lot of fun is there's a lot of intrigue surrounding this team. But, you know, on the flip side, you could look at it as a lot of things that could potentially not unfold the way you need them to be that surprise squad they hope to be.
Well, and that just comes part and parcel with what the direction of the organization is when you end up moving 5 or 6 pending unrestricted free agents and largely get back futures, you're going to have some gaps. You're not going to have everybody from the Wranglers ready to make the jump at the same time. And to your point, it's going to add intrigue to see, all right, who on the current roster is going to step up? Who in November, if anyone, we see elevated from the Wranglers and hit the ground running like we saw last year with Pospisil and Zeri? This is just the conversation you have for a team that's in a rebuild or a retool where this is only what? Like, are we counting this as year one? Are we counting last year as year one when they still had all those unrestricted free agents? Like, we're still in the infancy of what this is going to be.
Kind of feels like last year was year zero.
Right. That's the excellent way to put it. You knew it was coming, but you still had to make a lot of the moves to get there.
Yeah, there's a lot of house cleaning going on still.
And so, large part, that's all been done. There'll still be some more little items on the to-do list. But with that comes, okay, well, we've got holes here and we've got holes there. That's what year one of a rebuilding team looks like.
Yep.
Should they be worse? Like, because there is always going to be that question. Well, you want a number one center in next year's draft. That starts you on the upswing again.
They could go scorched earth. But there's a lot of argument against that because then, you know, you end up respectfully like the Buffalo Sabres who are going to have to go through another rebuild potentially, or you just get into a situation where you're constantly getting lottery picks and cycling them into your lineup, but you don't necessarily have the veteran group to show the way to get out of that situation.
Yeah. Okay. Then to tie those two into a bow to wrap it up. So you take a look at the Pacific Division going into this season. You have the team that went to the Stanley Cup Final coming out of the Pacific in Edmonton, along with other playoff teams, Los Angeles and Vegas and Vancouver. You add in Seattle, San Jose, and Anaheim. Wes, where do the Flames fit in the Pacific Division rundown? Like, compared to the other teams that they'll be playing most against and the teams that, will most impact their playoff fate. And let's be honest, inside that room, they're going to be talking about playoffs. And that coaching staff is going to be trying to put together the best roster to win as many games, to play more games in April. Where did the Flames stack up in the rest of the Pacific Division?
Well, they're not in the same class as the Edmonton Oilers, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Vancouver Canucks. They're not in the same class as the San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Ducks. At least for my money, they're in that pack in the middle of teams that I don't honestly know what we'll see out of. And when I say I honestly don't know, I just, you know, who finishes where in that pack that also includes Los Angeles, who I'm not very sold on, and Seattle and the Calgary Flames. I don't know. They're certainly not in that upper echelon, but I also don't think they're with those two California teams that are really going to continue to flounder.
Yep.
I don't see them in the same category like US as the Oilers, Canucks, or Golden Knights. I think that you can kind of remove those from the situation. I don't think they'll be as bad as the Ducks or Sharks. Out of that middle group with the Kings and Kraken, I feel like the safe or the boring places to go, okay, well, they might just be half a tier below the Kings and the Kraken, but now you're talking about Drew Doughty being out for an extended period of time, and who's going to eat up those minutes, and okay, what does the Kings goaltending look like, or what does the Seattle Kraken goaltending and or offense look like?
And the fact that they're about winless on Tuesday afternoons in October. Maybe.
Well, and that's a key stat to highlight.
Yeah.
Because although there is still,
I actually don't think the Kraken, and I know they haven't been around for a while, but like, I think they're so lousy, they've probably never won on a Tuesday afternoon.
In October. It's probably a bold claim for a guy that's done zero research.
I'm going to need someone to look this up, Pike, but I'm willing to go out on the limb.
I need more updates on the replica Saddle Dome at the airport. That's what I need. Pike,
wow.
Where are you?
Wow. Oh, try to keep the gloves up.
Danny, where you see
Pike,
this team?
Piker had no chance on that one.
I mean, you guys are right. There's no conceivable argument for having them with Vegas, Edmonton, and Vancouver. There shouldn't be. It's not where they are in their development, and I don't think that the Ducks or Sharks took a step forward. I think that the Kraken are likely, I mean, my impression is that they're trying to be better this year. The Kings are without, you know, their legendary defenseman for the first half of the season, at least. So, but that's one guy. I think the Flames should want to finish above the Ducks and Sharks, and that should probably be where the best thing for the franchise going forward would be finishing. And I do have to say that, like, I know, you know, it's not what we want to be talking about at the dawn of the season, but I do think that there's a very good chance that we see guys like Andre Kuzmenko and Anthony Mantha move before the deadline,
right,
and the team getting worse and losing in the short term. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. So, like, yeah, I think that they're the third worst team in the Pacific Division, and that's exactly where they should be. And that still doesn't make me not feel optimistic about the direction they're going.
I do think that they are, you know, I am curious about San Jose, only because I think back to, we're talking about Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith,
yep,
as two, like, potential franchise-changing individuals. And I just think of when Taves and Kane came into the league in Chicago, and the Hawks were a factor until right until the end. They ended up missing the playoffs, I think, by 3 or 4 points. They had 88 points. Now, that would be a 41-point improvement if San Jose were to get to 88 points. But San Jose also had a historically bad season last year where they were barely an NHL team. Apparently only when they played the Flames were they an NHL team the last couple of years. But The Sharks, I think, will be a little bit better than people give them credit for. I'm not putting a lot of stock in the Ducks. Or at the very least, I'm curious if the Sharks can be a little bit better. Just because if these young guys are a little more ready than we give them credit for, it could be fun. All that being said, I still think the Flames finish ahead of those two California teams. And I don't know. I'm not a big believer in anything Los Angeles does or is. They have been a playoff team, but an also-ran. Like, nobody expected them to beat Edmonton the last couple of years. So, and I don't think they're any better. In fact, I think they're significantly worse with some of their subtractions. And now, as we've talked about, Drew Doughty being hurt as well. I think they're probably in the middle tier, but maybe towards the bottom end of the middle tier. Like, I don't think, I guess what I would say is, yeah, the three teams that we're all putting in the top tier, they're there. The question is, can they, are they with Seattle and Los Angeles? I think probably they are when it's all said and done. Is them being with Seattle and Los Angeles going to put them in the fight for a wild card spot? Or is it going to put them where, you know, a lot of people are kind of hoping, a lot of fans, not all fans, but some fans are hoping that they're competitive but still in the bottom 10 to make sure they don't lose their first-round pick. That's going to be really interesting, and that's the one thing I don't know. But in the Pacific, I do think they're kind of in the middle tier as of right now.
Well, and what it can't do, and I know we're up against it, so I'll keep this quick, but you can't, if you're Craig Conroy, be making decisions near the trade deadline just based on this season. If you know, you can't be signing Anthony Mantha to a whopper of an extension because, you know, suddenly you're right in the fight. You don't want to be making a mistake with some of the moves that you could make to continue to focus on the future just to chase a wild card spot. And you know, for the patience that we've primarily seen out of Craig Conroy so far, I'm not super worried about that, but funny things can happen when you find yourself in the mix there.
We haven't seen that here in the past, have we?
Oh, boy.
I don't think anybody's ready quite to predict that. It'll be fun, though. And it's just good that it's finally here. Like, as much as, and this is no knock on any of the names, but as much as talking about, oh, what can, you know, player X do in preseason game number three? He's got a really big opportunity playing with the only NHL as much fun as that is, this is more fun. We got regular season hockey for the Flames on Wednesday night. Around the table, Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Do I have enough time to pull it up on my computer? No, I don't. So Danny Austin is on Twitter at what?
Danny Austin _9. That's right.
That's correct.
Danny Austin underscore.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are. Danny can confirm. Danny Austin _9. And Vix is at AA Vickers. If you want to get these three gentlemen on Twitter, thanks. So it's good. Good way to kick off the season, gents. A season opening roundtable. Thanks for hanging out at the Dome.
Thanks, bud.
Fun times. Next best thing to a Tuesday matinee.
Wes loves the Tuesday matinee to kick off the season.
What does make Wes excited other than a round of golf?
That's a good point. That'll wrap us up. My name is Pat Steinberg. Our producers this hour have been Shan and Cam. And this has been the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Save. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.